Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. We're going to talk about jury nullification in Michigan. And at the end of the video, I'm going to explain to you how you can get your hands on one of these books right here for substantially less than what they cost online. I'll explain to you why that is and how that works. And we'll do that after we talk about jury nullification. So I get a lot of people asking me about jury nullification. I've done a video about it before, but it's in the news now, especially in Michigan. And jury nullification is the concept that if you are seated as a juror on a trial in a criminal setting, and the judge gives you instructions and says, here is the law. If you find this, you must find this. If you find this, you must find this, and so on. And so a lot of jurors go back into the jury deliberation room, and they pick a four-person, and they start discussing things, and somebody says, the instructions say if we find this, then we must find this. And in the back of their mind, they've got an inkling that, is that really the case, or can I really just vote my conscience? And jury nullification is the concept that, technically speaking, jurors can do whatever they want back there, because no one ever asks what jurors were thinking or why they did. It's just they come back out and they say, we've reached a verdict. And then if the verdict's unanimous, it gets entered, and boom, that's it. And so in theory, a juror could actually just say, I don't like this law. I'm not going to enforce the law. I don't care what the instructions say. And the idea of that is jury nullification. Now, jury nullification is extremely controversial because the concern is that if you were to inform jurors, here's the law, here's the instructions, but you can do whatever you want, that jurors will let it go in one ear and out the other and just basically do whatever they want, and then mayhem will rule, okay? So you're not allowed to instruct a jury about jury nullification during a trial. An attorney who does that will get a mistrial so fast their head will spin as they're hauled off in handcuffs for contempt of court. You cannot instruct a jury during a trial that you are free to ignore the law. You cannot do that. That's a no-no in all 50 states. So here's the problem. Something happened in Michigan a couple years ago. It made the headlines. And as it's worked its way through the courts, it's making headlines again. A Michigan Supreme Court has now agreed to hear a jury tampering case because of pamphlets that were shared at a courthouse involving jury nullification. So this is out of Mecosta County, Michigan. It's up north a little ways. The state Supreme Court, this is Michigan's Supreme Court, will hear an appeal by a former pastor who was convicted of jury tampering for handing out pamphlets outside of a Big Rapids court. So Michigan's got a town called Big Rapids. We've got a town called Grand Rapids. I kid you not. Keith Eric Wood handed out pamphlets titled, Your Jury Rights, True or False? And the pamphlets included information on jury nullification and deciding cases according to your conscience rather than the law. Now, these pamphlets are not like, you know, counter-revolutionary. They're not so insidious that they're illegal or they're foul or they're obscene. They're just pamphlets about jury nullification. And that's something you and I are discussing right now. This is not an illegal discussion we're having. So if we can talk about it, you can write about it. Freedom of the press. Freedom of speech. So this man is standing near a courthouse. He's handing out pamphlets. He's standing on public property when he's doing this. And it was on November 4th, 2015, that there was going to be a case heard in that court where a jury would be seated to hear a dispute involving a man who was tangling with the state over his use of wetlands. Now, the man is Amish. I'm not sure if that matters or not to the story, because I don't think it does. And Wood handed pamphlets to many people, including two women who were there for jury selection. But a jury had not been picked yet. There was no jury. There was simply a trial scheduled to be heard, okay? So the Amish man's case settled before the trial began, but still, Wood was arrested for obstruction of justice and jury tampering. And many people, myself included, when we heard the story, wait, jury tampering, but there was no jury. And obstruction of justice for handing out pamphlets in a public place near a courthouse? He was not in the courthouse. If he was in the courtroom, this is absolutely forbidden. If he's in the hallways of the courthouse, I can see an argument being made. But he's outside of the courthouse. He's outside the courthouse. Wood contended that he was handing out pamphlets to anyone who would accept them, and that he did not know if any of them were prospective jurors. He argued it a First Amendment right to provide the information. And I can tell you right now, I've been walking places, I've had people hand me stuff. Go walk down the main drag in Las Vegas and watch what you get handed. Some of it, you're scared to touch it, okay? So the idea that you know, it's un-American to be handing out stuff, no, that's what people do, okay? So a judge, however, said the prosecutor and defense in the land use case had a right to a fair and impartial jury hearing the evidence. Well, yeah. The prosecution said Wood was aware of the land use case and tried to influence those that he believed to be jurors, even though there were no jurors yet. He said he should not have been convicted because the land use case did not go to trial. That's his argument. And I think it's a very strong argument. The state court of appeals, however, ruled that the two prospective jurors who got the pamphlets were jurors for the purposes of Michigan's jury tampering statute. Now, here's the thing. When you go to the Court of Appeals in Michigan, you get a panel of three judges, and you don't know which three you're going to get. And two of the judges ruled and said this. So there's one dissenting judge. Now, the appeals court said the state has a compelling interest in regulating Wood's speech outside of the courthouse to prevent influencing potential jurors. And here's what they wrote. Although speech is given great protection by the First Amendment, the state nonetheless has the right to punish certain limited speech so long as there's a compelling reason to do so, and the limitation is accomplished in the narrowest fashion, the appeals panel said in a 2-1 ruling. 2-1. The appeals court also rejected Wood's argument he only intended to educate jurors rather than influence them. You say educate, I say influence. The majority wrote, the law defendant was convicted under does not address the random distribution of pamphlets to the general public outside a courthouse. Instead, the legislature was concerned with an individual's purposeful attempt to tamper with jurors, which is a compelling state issue. Despite the fact there were no jurors on the premises because no one was selected because there was no trial. This is such an idiotic case that's going up on this, you know, up on appeal to the state Supreme Court, that you go, this is not the one they should be taking up on appeal. Because this very well could just get spun around by somebody going, those weren't jurors. There was no jury. How can you be a juror if you're not on a jury? Okay. So Wood said the statute was unconstitutionally overly broad when the term jurors is used to include far more than those who are actually seated on a jury. And that would seem to be such a common sense argument that I'm kind of surprised it's gotten this far. The American Civil Liberties of Michigan said, consider whether a citizen committed to decriminalizing possession of controlled substances, passing out material regarding the issue outside of a courthouse, would be charged with jury tampering if a prospective juror received the material. Can the court reject a woman's rights organization from holding a rally when a sex discrimination case is on the docket? You know, I mean, obviously, this has got some severe ramifications, but judges Christopher Murray and Thomas Cameron upheld the conviction while Judge William Murphy dissented, and he said that the legal references to jurors meant those seated on a jury, not prospective jurors. This is a great example where we talk about statutory construction. How do you construe a statute? Look at how a statute is made and what the people who drafted it were getting it when they drafted something. And you say, okay, it says jurors. If they wanted it to include prospective jurors, they would have said jurors or prospective jurors. That's pretty straightforward. And to assume that they meant something other than what they wrote is actually a problem, because it's pretty clear. A juror is somebody who's been selected for jury duty and has been sworn in as a juror. Until the moment they're sworn in, they're not a juror. They're not. So they're stretching it to get the result they want. When you stretch a statute, especially one that affects your right of free speech, that's a problem. So Judge Murphy says he would have reversed Wood's convictions. He said, however, that he is not saying that a trial court cannot prohibit or control the possible tainting of summoned jurors. So he's saying that there's possibly something they could be doing there, but it depends, and this ain't it. Wood was sentenced to 120 hours of community service, probation, and over $500 in fines. And the Supreme Court has encouraged the ACLU of Michigan, the Fully Informed Jury Association, which provided the pamphlet that Wood shared, the Cato Institute and others to step in and file briefs on this matter, which is kind of an unusual thing. A lot of these people would be filing briefs, but normally what happens is when something big gets in front of a Supreme Court, whether it's a state Supreme Court or the U.S. Supreme Court, there will often be people who approach the court and go, we would like to submit a brief on behalf of an interested party. They're called amicus briefs, which literally means, as translated from the Latin, like a friend of the court brief. And that's they often call them, the friend of the court. But it's somebody filing a brief on behalf of an interested party who's not an actual party to the case, but somebody who could be affected by it. So these other groups are going to weigh in. But it's, like I said, a little unusual that the Supreme Court has actually asked them to, as opposed to waiting for them to do it, because clearly they would have gotten involved either way. But here's the thing. Jury nullification is a concept that, like I said, has been controversial for many, many years. I remember reading about it before I went to law school. I remember reading about it back in the 80s. And it's been around for a long time as something people discuss on a theoretical level. And I'm also familiar, having taught trial practice and also taken classes on trial practice and trying cases myself, that you do not bring it up in a courtroom. Okay, that's fine. But can you bring it up outside of a courtroom in the building? Can you bring it up outside of the building, but on the courthouse grounds? What if he's standing across the street? Okay? In other words, there's a courthouse, and let's assume it's one of those old-style courthouses where there's a town square. Okay, I've not been to the Mecosta County Courthouse as far as I'm aware. But let's suppose that you're looking at one of these beautiful old style, old school courthouses. Big building, looks like a court. It's got cannons on the front lawn from the Civil War. And there's a grassy square around it. And there's streets, okay? Main Street, Elm Street, Maple Street, and 2nd Avenue, okay? Here's the courthouse square, okay? Let's suppose you're across the street in front of the Big Lots and you've got flyers and you're just handing them out to people walking by. Is that obstruction of justice? Is that jury tampering? What if you go around the corner and you're over by Dollar General and you can't even see the courthouse anymore and you're simply handing these things out? Obstruction of justice? Okay, jury tampering? At what point do we draw the line? And I would argue that unless you can show me that this guy was actually walking up to people saying, excuse me, I know that we're standing inside the Dollar General now, but are you perhaps called to court because you're on jury duty? You know, oh, is that a jury duty notice I see in your hands? If he's simply walking around handing out these things, it doesn't make any sense to me to call that obstruction of justice or jury tampering. It's simply handing out pamphlets in the vicinity of a courthouse. And that would be a very, very real problem. So I can tell you right now that I read the first article that brought this to my attention about jury nullification. I read it in the Wall Street Journal, I believe in the late 1980s. Why I remember that, I have no idea. But I remember that. And the idea, I remember reading it going, that's an interesting idea. But I mean, how many people read the Wall Street Journal and then remember something like that about jury nullification who will then later be called to sit in a jury? I don't know. And then you have to ask those same people to ignore the court instructions, okay? Times have changed. And right now, not only are the pamphlets out there, but there's people on the internet talking about this stuff. And if you look up jury nullification on the internet, you're going to find videos about it, for instance, on YouTube. And you're going to find all kinds of articles about it on the internet. So, you know, this horse is out of the barn. And how widely this is publicized, I don't know. But the point simply is this, that jury nullification is a concept that has been reduced to pamphlets, and those pamphlets are getting handed out. And whether a person who's standing near a courthouse is handing them out and is then obstructing justice thereby simply by handing those out, I see that as a problem. So I'm going to wait to see what the Michigan Supreme Court says. I suspect they're going to agree with me on this one, if for no other reason, that there was no jury to tamper with. There was a prospective jury to tamper with, in which case you call it prospective jury tampering, which apparently I don't think is against the law. But I could be wrong, and I've been wrong before. What can I tell you? So there you go. Michigan Supreme Court's agreed to hear the case, and when they do, I will let you know what happens. Now, back to the book, Dodge, Daytona, and Plymouth Superbird. It's a hardcover book I wrote not too long ago, and it explains about where this car came from and how there were street versions of that car made that Chrysler built to race in NASCAR. And this is like a coffee table book. And there's the car I had a ride in, Richard Petty's 43. I've had a ride in that car. I've driven that car. That's Bobby Isaacs. That's the one this model's based off of. But this book, written by this guy right there, smiling, has over 400 high-resolution photographs on high-gloss paper. And like I said, it's like a coffee table book. And I'm proud of this book. I put a lot of work in this book. And like I said, it's a hardcover. You'd be proud to have it too, if especially you're a Mopar guy. So I ordered a case of these books. I was planning on going to a car show I mentioned before in Alabama, but I didn't make it to the car show. Long, long story. I got a case of these books, okay? So normally the book has a sticker price of $44.95. Even on Amazon Prime, delivered to your door is $40. So for me, they're $30. Okay, while these supplies last, I got a case of them, $30. That includes postage. I'll sign it, send it to you. And what I'll do is I'll invoice you via Square. So if you want the book, Dodge Daytona, Plymouth Superbird, just send me an email with DDPS or something like that in the regards line and say, Steve, I'd like one. Invoice me. I'll send you the invoice. Square is like PayPal. It's secure. It sends you the invoice. You pay it. Boom, I get the thing back and I send it to you. It'll go out the next day. So like I said, while supplies last, $30, I'm going to save you $10, more than $10, off the price from Amazon. There you go. Hey, you get something for watching these videos. So there you have it. Questions, comments, put them below. Otherwise, talk to you later. Bye-bye.